Welcome to LassoCast, where we will dive into each episode of the brilliant Apple TV Plus sitcom Ted Lasso and discuss why it may just be the perfect show, or at least the show that the world and especially America needs right now. My name is John Rhodes. I am a biscuit eating machine, and I am joined by
Kenny Madison, a co-host. How I feel like I should have more. John, I just called you Ted.
What an honor.
Should I have more? Should I say more?
It's up to you.
No.
There's no guidelines.
You decline?
I decline. My identifier is fan.
Do you yield your time?
I yield my time to the good senator in the closet.
Hello, I'm Saida Rhodes. I'm the senator of the closet. I'm a producer and Jenny's ice cream enthusiast. And I get to introduce our very special guest today. So, guys, our guest is a writer, director, actor, philanthropist. She's a wedding officiant. There's really nothing she can't do. Ladies and gentlemen, yes, the always delightful Juliet Gray.
Thank you so much. What an introduction.
Incredible.
I'm so happy.
Welcome.
And I'm so excited to be here to talk about this show because I love it so much.
And Juliet, you're married to an Englishman.
I am. So it makes it extra fun. It really does.
Did he watch it with you?
Oh, yes. He did. And he loved it. He loved it. Yes. And he's a stickler for things. I think because it's so authentic, they're really seemingly there. And the players are from where they're from for the most part. So you don't have Americans making up their accents, which drives him a little bit nuts.
Did you see the whole season or are you watching it live now?
I did. I saw the whole season and I'm ready to dive back in and watch it again.
That is
my love for this program.
Yeah, I mean, Cy and I have watched episode 2, I think 4 times in the last 2 days. And it's so much fun every time. I'm not like zoning out at all or skipping over anything. It's great.
No, it's such an easy watch.
It really is. Right. And there's little moments that that I love to just live in for a minute because I might know that they're coming, but I just let them wash over me. I can't say enough about it.
Before we start the episode recap, I want to run down Coach Beard's stats of the week. I like to mark some things down that I see in the show and share them with you guys.
Outstanding.
In this episode, which is entitled it's an episode 2 entitled Biscuits. There are 6 references to cultural differences.
Whoa.
1 celebratory hand gesture shared with a tree-shaped piece of furniture. there are 3 bites of biscuits.
Ooh.
31 uses of the word wanker.
31? You counted this out?
I counted the crowd and everything.
Wow. Wow.
I love it.
There's 1 Higgins choke up and 2 beautiful arts and crafts projects.
Oh, 31 uses of the word wanker in this episode. John, you're doing the Lord's work by getting these stats. God bless you.
Somebody's got to do it.
Someone's got to. The internet is screaming at the top of their lungs. How much is he saying wanker?
They're waiting for the report to be published.
It's the Pentagon Papers, the Mueller report, and then John's report on how much they say wanker.
Yeah, the wanker report.
The wanker report.
Yeah.
It really, really is a very bad word to call somebody.
We stop saying it?
Yes. I learned that when I went over there the first time. I also learned the word fanny means something different.
Yes.
And you should not say, did the little child fall in her fanny in front of your boyfriend's entire family? FYI, for example.
Do you say that people fall on their fanny on a regular basis beforehand?
No, I was trying to be polite, and the only word I could think of, having grown up in the South, for bottom or was that word. It just came out of my mouth. I don't know why, but it was a moment that has not been forgotten all these many years.
All right.
aside from being a producer and a writer and a director and an actor and a singer and a dancer and a wedding officiant who married Saida and me, Juliet also works with a great organization called Performing Arts Project. Juliet, do you want to give them a little shout out?
Ooh, thank you. Yes, the performingartsproject.com. The Performing Arts Project is a nonprofit organization that we train. We provide vibrant theatrical training to high school and college age kids. And the faculty is made up of Broadway, television, and film performers currently working in the industry. And so we do summer intensives both online and in person once we are all able to be in person and do theater again. And we really focus on training people to be the artists only they can be. So it's a lot of fun work, and where our main things are our summer intensives, and we're doing auditions every January and February of every year for our summer programming. So thank you. That's a little bit about the Performing Arts Project, and we're celebrating our 10 years of doing holy this moly. Programming this year.
Wow.
So that's awesome. Exciting for a founder to be able to, we're still at it and growing all the time. So thank you for
asking
that.
That's incredible.
Of course. I've spent a few summers with them during the intensives, and it's so inspiring and so much fun, and everybody there is awesome. So if you're listening to this, check it out. Donate some money, or if you have a kid who's interested in the theater, get them in there. So we start off this episode with Ted waking up and meeting Beard for coffee.
Hold on.
What?
We start off with an Apple original.
Oh, God.
And truly then the logo. A Warner Brothers television production.
And then
Ted waking up.
Ted wakes up. Kenny, listen up. I'm going to skip over some stuff. We don't have time to hit every single detail.
Look, if this podcast is going to be your number one source for all things Lasso, you got to be complete about it, baby.
And if you're going to be complete about it, he eats a very large piece of shredded wheat for breakfast. And I'll have you know, that was my childhood. We would have warm milk and shredded wheat, which is horrifying thinking about it now. But it was so yummy at the time.
Yeah, that sounds kind of tasty.
Well, you know what's funny? Kenny, it's not tasty. It's very bland.
Okay, never mind. I take that back.
It's not like American cereal. But here's the thing. When I was over in England visiting Saida's family, they had those individual – those bricks were individually wrapped within the box.
Yeah, man. Keep them crispy.
So I don't know if things have changed or if Ted Lasso is just skipping that little element. So, yeah, after Ted wakes up and he meets Beard for coffee, he's all nervous, like it's the first day of school, he's getting the jitters. And Kenny, I'm gonna skip over some things, okay? And if you want to fill them in, that's fine, but I'm just telling you now, I'm not gonna hit everything, okay?
Okay, but really you're doing the audience a disservice, John. I'm so sorry.
The very next shot, Lasso meets Rebecca in her office and brings her a beautiful little pink box of biscuits. Awesome. This is where we're introduced to the star of the show, Biscuits. Rebecca declines the offer at first, but she can't resist their beauty, and she takes a bite, which instantly transports her back to somewhere she likely last felt comfortable.
I'm looking at these biscuits right now because I have the episode pulled up right here, and this, oh man. These biscuits are looking so tasty.
Shout out to the art department for making such delicious looking biscuits.
I agree on that.
Yeah.
I have a question for everyone. Is there a cookie or a biscuit that isn't necessarily the best or your favorite, but one that brings you back to your childhood?
This technically kind of sort of counts as a cookie, but oatmeal cream pies. Well, I guess it says pie in it, but it's sandwiched by two oatmeal cookies shapes. And oatmeal cream pies were something that were delicious always for me. And also, I have just never eaten since my time in school for some reason.
Really?
Probably because oatmeal cream pies are probably horrendous for you. But really, that hasn't stopped me from frequenting Jack in the Box's munchy meal menu. But yeah, oatmeal cream pies anytime. Well, really, Little Debbie snack cakes in general. Anytime I see those, those are total just bring me back to childhood treats.
That's a good one.
John knows I love digestive cookies. So they're like these discs that are, I mean, they're very bland, but kind of salty, but kind of sweet, and they crumble nicely, and they're good with tea, and they're good with coffee, and they're good with everything, and they are amazing. And you can get them in the UK, and you can get them here. They're great. What is it, McBites? I want to say
McVitie's, McBites. Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
They're good.
They are.
Honey, I will get you some digestives. We just went through a full sleeve this weekend at our house, but I will get one for you too.
Well, for me, it would be, if we're talking about cookies, it would be Nutter Butters. But
yes.
I haven't had one in a million years. And in fact, when I was a kid, my mom told me that they stopped making them. Because apparently my sister and I would, you know, take we would lose all control when it came to the Nutter Butters. So she told us, and I don't know how she pulled this off thinking about it now, but she said, "I'm so sorry. They just stopped making them, so we can't buy them anymore." And wow. I was in college in the grocery store, and I was like, oh, they have Nutter Butters. And I called my mom and I said, they have Nutter Butters again. They're back. And she said, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. I have to tell you. So every time I see them in the grocery store, I'm like, oh, you Nutter Butters.
For me, it's EL Fudge. Y'all know what that is. The elf-shaped cookies.
Yes. Is it the sandwich cookie or it's not a sandwich?
Yeah, it's a sandwich cookie. It's like chocolate cream between two.
Yes.
Elf.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And it's probably not good. Like, if I tried it for the first time now, it'd probably be horrible. Mm-hmm. But it is just like the taste of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. So good.
Lovely.
So Ted pitches biscuits with the boss every morning so he and Rebecca can get to know each other a little more. Of course, Rebecca is resistant to the idea, but Ted persists. He asks her what her first and best concert experiences are. Her answer for both is Spice Girls,
which I call shenanigans. Are like, no offense, but I'm like, you're a grown woman. There's no way Spice Girls was your first concert. There's no way.
Right. Or she just didn't see a concert till she was 24.
I don't believe that for a second.
Do you guys remember your first and best concert experiences? I can go first. My very first concert, at least the first one that I remember going to, was a double billing at the Coral Sky Amphitheater in West Palm Beach. It was John Michael Montgomery and Leanne Rimes. Ooh. And it was also the first time I smelled marijuana.
Ooh.
A big night for me.
So there's one thing that screams marijuana, it's Leanne Rimes.
Doesn't it?
And my best ever was the Beastie Boys with Talib Kweli. It was in Fort Lauderdale when I was probably 20 years old, and it was their last tour, basically. It was just an amazing show. We got up front. I wore a shirt that said, "Fuck George Bush," and Mike D pointed it out.
Oh, it was great. Dope. That's really cool.
Nice. My first concert was Madonna.
Whoa!
Wow. That's huge.
Yes, yes. And then I would say my favorite thus far was we saw the Avett Brothers in Key West at the amphitheater, and it was one of those, they do two shows, you know, one show each night, and it was, we went to both because the first ended up being like seeing act one and the second ended up being like act two. They set it up when they play back to back shows. They really do different things each night. And it was one of those beautiful Key West nights where for whatever reason, their humidity was low. The winds were blowing. It was like in the low 70s. It was just fantastic. And their music, I love their music so much. They're such great storytellers. So that's quite a difference. It tells you I started at Madonna and now I'm at the Avett Brothers.
You kind of had the opposite trajectory that I had.
That's true. It's true.
My trajectory was pretty flat. So my first was Michelle Branch. It was a good time. Don't get me wrong.
Nice.
Yeah. My stepdad got it for me and my sisters. And he was like, hey, ladies, I'm cool. And we're like, okay.
And you're like, you are cool.
Yeah, why not? So that was fun. And then best concert, probably because my first concert was Michelle Branch. The best one came in college. I saw the Jonas Brothers. Now, hear me out. Yeah, so it was a little past my age group for sure. But my best friend's younger sister was going. She was going to take her. And she was like, well, I need a friend. So I'm like, I'll go. It was amazing. Like, amazing. Ah, so great.
Love it.
My first concert, and this is very on brand for anyone that will probably know me, is Weird Al Yankovic. I was 9 years old, 10 years old.
Beautiful.
That was the Running with Scissors tour. And it was just the absolute best. I saw that at the Brady Theater in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Because for some reason, Weird Al and Tulsa are kind of associated.
That feels right.
He shot UHF there in Tulsa and is also a frequent collaborator with Hanson, of all people. I know, right? And yet he directed like a Hanson music video. It appears in Hanson music videos. Random, I know, but that's a thing. And my best concert experience was I saw The Lonely Island on their first tour. Well, I guess their only tour, and was there the first night. And I, if the court will permit me to tell a little bit of a story that's associated with it, because the concert itself was fine, but it's one of my favorite memories. I had a coworker. His name was Mitchell, and he was great. I love him to death. And B, one of the things that I would do to frequently troll him was send Spring Break Anthem by Lonely Island, which, if you haven't heard it, it's a banger. That's just basically about college kids getting drunk, getting laid, and also settling down and having a monogamous relationship with another man. it's a hilarious song, and I would just consistently send it to him, to the point where I went to Ireland for 2 weeks, but I set up a Slack bot to make sure that it's sent to him every day. Even while I was away, that way, just keep the bit alive. And then I saw that Lonely Island was going on tour, and I went, oh, I know. I need to surprise Mitchell with Lonely Island tickets so I can keep this bit going. So I bought the tickets, invited him, and just lured him out on the pretense of, let's just get caught up. We haven't seen each other in a while, which is true. And then I say we should just go around on a walk. And so we just walk around downtown Austin, and the concert was at ACL, and I just kind of walk around the building, and I'm like, isn't this the ACL building? And he's like, oh yeah, no, they have concerts here. And that was whatever. I just kind of bust out the fact that I had spent $75 a ticket for two tickets and that he was going to go to the Lonely Island concert. And just, he was like, your commitment to the bit is absolutely insane. How expensive was this?
That is dedication.
Yeah. I'm all about the bit.
Ted's first concert was Kenny Rogers.
What is Kenny Rogers sing?
Huh?
Oh boy. What is Kenny Rogers sing? Oh no.
Islands in the Stream, The Gambler. Oh, he sings
sure,
it.
Sure.
He sings the song in the episode.
My turn. First concert. Well, I mean, come on. It was the gambler himself, Mr. Kenny Rogers.
Okay.
You got to know when to hold 'em.
Ted.
When to hold 'em. Know when to fold 'em. When to fold 'em.
Coach
know
Lasso.
When to walk away. Know when to
stop.
Didn't he have a chicken place?
Yeah,
the chicken restaurant.
What was it called? Because my improv duo Kenny Rogers kept getting tagged on Facebook as part of the Kenny Rogers restaurant. I think it was a Philippines branch. Kenny Rogers Roasters. That's Roasters, right.
There's, yeah. I feel like my dad had a little plastic cup from that place when I was a kid, and that's the extent of my experience with Roasters.
Roasters.
Sure. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fry them.
No one to walk away, no one to run. Okay, I'm with you. All right.
I guess if the joke properly scales, it should be you got to know when to grill them, know when to fry them.
Right. Then what?
Know when to barbecue. Mm. and know when to
boil.
Oh, very good. There's nothing better than boiled chicken.
Oh my God, so tender. Oh. Oh. And the water? Oh.
Yeah, boiled chicken and a nice side of chicken broth. Well, chicken broth is a real thing.
Oof. Yummy. So now we go to training, where Ted's a little nervous. He's got the shaky hands, and Coach Beard reminds him.
Wait.
What?
You skipped the opening credits. I almost called you Ted again. That is weird.
It makes sense.
John. Your name is John.
Mm-hmm. What?
No, I was just saying, I was just calling you John. Okay. Your name is John.
Yeah. So then we see the credits. We get that song again and the chairs changing.
Well, because you asked our opinions of what the opening credits were. Juliet, yay on the opening credits, nay on the opening credits.
Oh, good question. Well, this time I watched them again and I felt like I got it. But the point of them did elude me until this time. I binge watched it and still didn't really see the metaphor of the stadium becoming clean and, you know, the graffiti getting wiped away. He's there to make it a cheerier place and a cohesive environment.
Juliet, can I give you a recommendation, something fun to do?
Yes, please.
So I was talking to my sister yesterday and we went on a rabbit hole about Joshua Jackson. He just got married to this woman named Jody. She's so beautiful. And they just had a child. Please Google him. There's so much.
Oh, yes. You mean Percy from Dawson's Creek?
Of course.
I think you mean Charlie from the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, that's also true.
Penny for the win.
My sociology teacher in sophomore year of college said that I looked like Joshua Jackson.
Oh my gosh. What a compliment.
Wow.
Most definitely. Absolutely. What a snack.
When I was 16, I just got home from a screening of The Skulls, a movie that he was in.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I told my dad, he's the next George Clooney.
He has a George Clooney face for sure. He's got beautiful bone structure.
Yeah.
Oh, Pacey. I said Percy. It was Pacey. I'm hearing Pacey.
Yes, Pacey Witter. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What a name.
Oh, yeah. What a John thing to say.
I feel like.
I just wanted my dad to know. I don't know how he reacted to that, but.
Dad, Joshua Jackson is the next George Clooney.
It's fantastic.
On the pitch, Jamie Tartt shows off his undeniable skills with a nice goal and his complete lack of sportsmanship by picking on Sam, who's played wonderfully by
Taheeb
Jimmo, who has a small part in the upcoming Wes Anderson film, The French Dispatch. So that's pretty exciting.
Can't wait.
He's great in this episode, Taheeb.
So Sam's, you know, he's kind of sad and he's not doing so great at practice. And then Ted gives him advice to be more like a goldfish. And why be more like a goldfish? Because they have a 10-second memory.
Right. Forget about that last point. Move on.
That's great advice. I mean, let's be honest. I love that.
I was telling Sai, it's advice that I got all the time when I played Little League Baseball. Because I had the tendency, like, if I screwed up a ground ball or something, I would just be like bad the rest of the game. So coaches would always say, gotta have a short memory.
Nice. Well, it's good because we're all afraid to fail. So it's sort of like, you know, you say fail forward, but then they're afraid of making a mistake. And then the mistake seems like you've screwed up everything. But truthfully, you just have to keep trying at it and you'll get there.
Right. Especially when it's a team sport.
Yeah.
You're carrying more people than just yourself. The failures are bigger.
That's right. 11 brothers. Wait a minute.
It's a failure times 11.
Yeah, but also they're not that big of a deal. Forget about it.
Right. It's a tricky thing. Our brains.
Sounds like conflicting advice now.
Yep.
Well, Nate debriefs Ted on Sam and his his underwhelming performance since arriving from Nigeria. Ted says that basically homesickness can do that to you and suggests that they Nigeria him up. Oh. Nigeria him up.
Okay, great. Good fun.
This is fun.
Good fun, yes.
Kenny, are you ever homesick? Where are you from again?
The answer is no. I do miss aspects of home. I'm from Sand Springs, Oklahoma, which is about 15 minutes some direction of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And I am homesick for certain aspects of it. Oddly enough, the Chinese food, which is weird, but for some reason I haven't had better Chinese food than in Sand Springs, Oklahoma. Perhaps it's just major nostalgia stuff attached to it. But for some reason, I haven't had better sweet and sour chicken than sweet and sour pork than there. And then just the familiarity with all of that stuff.
Juliet, are you homesick?
I am a little bit displaced. I'm still in Florida, but yes, I miss the place where I was living for a long amount of time, but I'm also sort of quarantined away from everybody. So it's easy to not take any risks because I don't have any friends here.
I hear that.
Everyone is just like, quarantine is so hard. And Juliet's like, yeah, I know. I can't see any of all of my friends down here, which is just the worst.
That's right. So yes, there are definitely a lot of aspects of things that I miss. But I also tend to really am always excited about what's next in the future. And I don't tend to look back and too much usually and say, oh, I miss this aspect of where I grew up or whatever. I'm excited to be like, oh, where am I going next? What's going to happen?
After training, Rebecca enlists Higgins to find the source of the biscuits that Ted brought her that morning. She's obsessed with them. But after that, we go into the locker room and Ted tells the team that he wants to change the atmosphere of the team and how they do things in the locker room. So to start, Nate has made a suggestion box with his niece for them to anonymously share things that they would like to see change.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful box. It's made with, it's purple and glittery.
I also like in this scene that we kind of see that Coach Beard doesn't know that much about soccer yet, but he's trying. When Ted asks him, you know, what we should look forward to when we play Crystal Palace, he just says, a lot of speed on the outside. A lot of speed. later on, Ted holds the door open for Rebecca for a ridiculous amount of time as she exits the building. And Keely shows up in her sports car and poses the question to Rebecca and Ted, would you rather be a lion or a panda? Ted says panda, of course, but Rebecca aggressively answers lion.
What are you guys? Are we lions or are we pandas?
I think we're all pandas, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
Not only am I very much a panda, I actually have a cartoon that someone drew of me as a panda.
One of the little throwaway jokes that I picked up on the fourth time watching this episode after at the end of the scene, when Jamie is leaving and he says, cheers to Ted. Ted says, night court. Oh. That's so great. I never heard it the first three times.
Oh. Wow. I didn't hear that. Oh my gosh,
that's so funny.
There's so many throwaways. It's great. The next morning, Ted interrupts Rebecca trying a selection of biscuits from around town that Higgins has gathered for her. None of them stack up to Ted's. But Ted brings in more of his own biscuits and doubles down on his efforts to create some bonding throughout the organization. He's even having a salad with Higgins for lunch later on.
Aw.
And this is where we find out that Ted's favorite concert was the Beastie Boys, like me.
Whoa. John, that's like you.
Is that why you're calling me Ted?
Yeah, because you both are in love with the Beastie Boys.
And also there's the part of the scene that makes me laugh out loud every time. In one time, Sai even asked, what are you doing? Because she heard me laughing in the other room. was when Higgins says, "See you later," and Ted just like busts back into the office and scares everybody just to say yes. That's so great. I don't know why that really gets me.
I love it.
It's just not necessary, but it's great.
It's funny, and that's why Ted does it, because he knows that he's funny.
Back in the locker room, Ted sends Sam up to Higgins's office. Higgins's? Is that right?
Higgins?
Yes.
Higgins. It would be Higgins's, because if there were multiple Higgins, then it would be, wait, Higgins.
Higgins's. Yeah, I think it might be Higgins. Higgins's office?
Higgins's.
Higgins.
Higgins' eye. Higgins. They go back to up to the office.
Up there, yeah. To get him out of Dodge while they collect birthday money from the team for him. But, Nate debuts another amazing box with a mouth for a money hole and walks around collecting cash. Another beautiful box that Ted really loves. And then Jamie, being the guy that he is,
puts
chewing gum in the money hole, saying it will make the money smell good.
Womp, womp.
Womp womp. But I will say, shout out to the wardrobe department, because they are really keeping up with Jamie's style. So he's still wearing his like kind of douchey tracksuit. So episode one, we get a floral silk tracksuit. Episode two, we get a black and white tracksuit. And then later we get another floral tracksuit. It's a good time.
In that scene where he puts the gub in the shoebox, he's wearing a hat that says Icon.
Yeah.
Genius.
Which is outstanding. And also Roy is shirtless again. Which I'm a big fan of Roy being shirtless. He's just got the hairiest chest.
I have no problem with that.
Oh, he's a hunk, baby.
It's also interesting to me that his back is completely bare.
That's what I was thinking.
How do you have a chest that hairy and no hair on your back?
I don't know a lot of shirtless men, so I couldn't be an authority, but I too was like, sure, they'd be on both. I don't know.
How many shirtless men do you know, Si? Name them all.
I just not many. Stop.
So yeah, Jamie's a jerk. Ted talks to him about that, and Jamie promises that he'll be better. But as soon as Ted turns around, Jamie makes the wanker gesture. So, you know, he's not ready to grow quite yet.
He's a bad boy.
He's a bad boy, but, you know, Ted sees the good in him. He's not going to give up on him.
Which is so delightful, because he could see. I think a worse written show would just have Ted be against Jamie, as opposed to the more complicated choice of going, we need Jamie. He's genuinely a good player. And also, he is really bad for the team. Mm-hmm. How do we make him be a more positive influence on the team? That's such a complicated writing choice.
Yeah, and then later on, we'll see an even bolder choice a couple episodes away.
Why, is Roy shirtless again?
Oh, my God.
I think he's shirtless every episode. I mean, I don't hate it. I do not hate it.
Now we have another press conference where a reporter from The Sun asks Rebecca about her ex-husband Rupert's new girlfriend, who has actually been with Rupert for years, even during his marriage to Rebecca. And this is news to Rebecca. She's devastated by the revelation, but she deflects the answer with a joke and ends the press conference. But she's obviously torn up.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine someone just like, I don't understand why you would even do that so boldly in a press conference.
It's like, The Sun.
That's so rude. I can't imagine being put on the spot like that. She does a good job, or at least her character does.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but tabloid culture and the UK is way more aggressive there. Am I wrong? I could be wrong.
I do know that they would turn to page 3 of The Sun had ladies, topless ladies.
The page 3 girls.
Right. So that was a big hit with the young lads.
Really?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, in the UK, you could just buy a newspaper and it would have naked women in it.
That's wild. Yeah.
And the same with shows after 9 p.m.
Naked dating, baby.
A coworker of mine was talking about naked dating the other day, because she too was in the UK once and just stumbled upon naked dating on TV.
It's unbelievable.
I would ask what naked dating is, but it seems pretty self-explanatory.
It's exactly as it sounds. Yes. These people are on a show and they're going to date a you know, a naked person on. No, wait, is everyone naked?
This is what it is. There's one person who's the contestant, we'll say.
Okay, then, I'm glad that there is explanation needed for a show that is called Naked Dating.
I have to explain it.
Sure.
So there's one person who's the contestant, and she's going to pick between three people who are behind screens. The first round, the screen lifts just enough can examine their penises. Like, we get a lot of close-ups of penises. And then it reverses, and we see women in there, so we get close-ups of their vaginas. So the first round is that, and based on the penis alone, she has to eliminate somebody.
Outstanding. Yes. And so then
round two, there's two people left, and the screen lifts up to their chest, so she can see chest down, and she picks the winner based on that. And then they meet each other naked. They're both naked when they meet.
Yeah.
And then the show follows them after, like, they go on a few dates, and it kind of follows up with how they did. Sometimes they get married and they find love.
With clothes. They go on dates with clothes.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So the show, it's a delivery of false goods.
Well, aren't you glad I explained it?
Unfortunately. I want to see them in a sushi restaurant, but they're just both buck naked.
Is that a euphemism?
A sushi restaurant?
Yeah. Anyway, just imagine, like, watching CBS at 9 p.m. and you're seeing, like, close-up of dick and balls. That's how it is over there.
I mean, I'm all for more representation of penises because I think it's way too one-sided about female objectification. More dongs.
So after the press conference, we cut to Rebecca in her office reading tabloids about Rupert. She's real hung up on the guy and the shitty things that he's done to her. And Ted comes in to check on her and make sure she's okay because he's a sweetheart. He brings a care package from home with him, stuffed with items like a homemade kazoo, barbecue sauce, a plastic bag full of army men. I have another question for all y'all.
Great.
And okay, we'll start with Juliet.
Yes.
Awesome.
Tell me one item that you would like to see in a care package from home.
In a care package to me from home? One item? My sister.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I love that. And also, your sister's dope. I miss her.
She is. She's the best. That would be the best.
What about you, Kenny?
Easy peasy. I believe that would be the 5-piece family egg roll dish from Chinese Express right next to the high school at Sand Springs, Oklahoma. Gosh, those egg rolls are so good. They make me so happy.
You know, I just like my family's cooking. I would take any sort of West Indian food from my dad or split pea soup from my mom. Just jar it up, send it right on over.
Yeah, I would take in my care package some West Indian food from
my dad.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'd probably say my mom's stroganoff. If that could be shipped safely, give it to me.
This man loves stroganoff. It scares me so much. I don't understand stroganoff at all.
I'm just imagining a box filled with wet noodles.
just gray brown noodles.
Yeah. And everyone else is grossed out except for John.
Just eating it out of the box.
Just jumping around for joy around the house, getting wet noodles all over the place.
Yeah, why reheat them? Just eat them straight out of the box.
They've been cooked in the back of a UPS truck for 4 days. They're good.
Just steaming.
So Ted asks Rebecca for help dealing with Jamie. He just can't figure him out, but he doesn't. You know, he wants to help him better himself. And something clicks for Rebecca, and she suggests that Ted talk to Keely, his girlfriend, to gain insight on him.
Yeah, so he does it. So then he ends up going to Keely's photo shoot and they're, you know, chit-chat and having a good time. And what I brought up in the last episode is that Keely's personality is very flirtatious. So it is a little confusing to understand, can we trust Keely? What's happening here? Because I do think they set us up to believe there's going to be a scandal. And spoilers, you know, there isn't one. I'm sorry. But like, it is interesting that Rebecca gets a vibe and is like, ooh, I'm going to send Ted over there and we're going to see what happens. But yeah, they have a nice conversation. And did y'all notice what the shoot is for? Did they even say it?
I think it was for a vodka.
Yeah. Energy drink vodka.
Yeah, it's like a coffee liquor. And like the bottle's like
clear.
Yeah, it's clear, but it's coffee flavored because there's a label that says coffee, but then it's also like Ed Hardy graphics. So I'm like, oh, this is quite an endorsement here. Interesting.
I love the girl, they set up this whole shot for this one moment with the girl who's the panda.
Yeah.
Like that she gives to them. It's that level of detail that I love. I think about setting it up, finding the actors, making it, and then you just get this one shot. It's so great. It's so funny.
Yep. I feel like a lot of shows, there would be like producers fighting to cut that shot. They're like, we don't need that shot. It's one shot. We can't spend 4 hours setting. I just like that they took the time to do that.
I mean, considering Bill Lawrence did Scrubs, which that show is all about overcommitting for like a 5-10 second bit. It's totally fitting within that career.
Nice.
And I love the little dude in the green suit who just like gets up, leaves the suit on, goes to the catering line, looking at the menu. It's so great.
I love it.
You like the show?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, good.
So yeah, we see the paparazzi hiding behind a tree, snapping shots of Ted and Keeley laughing and flirting, like Cy said.
Well, Rebecca's he's feeding up to no her good. A damn burger, like all Lady and the Tramp style in the photos, even though that's not the context, but that's how it comes off for sure.
Yeah, I can see that. That's scandal worthy.
That is scandal worthy. I will say though, she had like the crazy long nails, so it was warranted. Like, there's no way you're like picking up a burger with nails that long. Yeah. It just doesn't seem possible.
She had fur in her hands. You don't want to get ketchup on that fur. That'll never come out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those burgers did not look good.
Who's putting, like, what craft services is bringing burgers to like a model shoot? Like, that's not a thing.
Hey, guess what? It's game day. In the locker room before the match, Ted and the team surprise Sam with a nice little birthday party.
Wow.
Cakes and gifts and the like. And Ted and Sam share a tender moment. And Jamie continues to be an asshole. I want to mention that Taheeb is so good in this scene. I feel like it's super hard to act surprised and happy when you're opening gifts. Like, I know from experience. And he just nails it. Like, it might be the most genuine gift opening acting that I've seen. It's so good. Because usually that kind of thing in a movie makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it's just so good.
Oh, yeah. He gets the chinchin snack, which is, I looked it up. It is a fried snack from West Africa. It's very crunchy and it's donut-like. And you can get it on Amazon. Mm. It's great with coffee and with tea.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can we get some? Is that in the podcast budget?
Oh shoot, I should have seen how much it costs. I don't know. Probably. It didn't seem crazy. As I scanned the Amazon page, I didn't feel like I'll never be able to afford these. So yeah. I think we can get some chin chin.
There's a little thing I like in this scene where they cut to Coach Beard at the whiteboard. Like writing down the strategy for the game, and all he's written down is very fast. He still just doesn't know.
Good work, coach. It's great.
And also there's a fun little end joke at the end of the scene when Ted says, let's show Crystal Palace whose house this is. And in reality, the stadium where the show is filmed is the stadium where Crystal Palace plays in real life. Oh. So it is their house.
Nice.
Oh, and I want to go back to Sam for a quick second, because Ted gave Rebecca one of the army soldiers that he got from his care package. And then he also offers Sam an army soldier, which was a very kind gesture. But I love that Sam declined. Yeah. Sam says he does not have a fondness for American military, imperialism. So great. They didn't even have to go there. And I'm like, good on you, Sam. You do you.
Yeah.
And another brilliant stroke is not Ted to be hurt by that, but yep. Ted going, oh, yeah, no, I understand. Never.
Yep. Moving on.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Just another, like, again, a lesser sitcom would have kind of made that into a B plot and probably stretched that.
Yeah. As played some sad music.
Yeah.
Or just made him be like, oh, thanks, Ted. Like, no.
Yeah.
Sorry, what was that?
It's a great Sam.
That's my Sam impression. No, it doesn't read.
You're the man, Ted. Yeah, my name's Sam.
I play soccer.
You guys call me Chin Chin?
Chin Chin. Yeah.
We all got it.
That's what I got from the episode. No?
I like Chin Chin.
So Ted and Beard, they walk out onto the pitch and they're greeted by a sea of wanker. Oh my god, so much wanker.
So many wankers.
And we even see in the local pub in a little cutaway, everybody there shouting wanker. Nobody's ready to respect this man yet. And it's hilarious because Ted says, we have 90 minutes to prove them wrong. And then we immediately cut to the end of the game and they've lost 4-1.
Guys, can I just tell you, I played flag football in high school for 3 years. Senior year, I was like, all right, I got to stop doing this. We won 0 games for 3 years. And it was Powderpuff where it's one game per season. It was a whole damn season. Won 0 games.
You played flag football in high school?
We sure did.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the Boone Braves had a lady team. And you know, it wasn't great. All of the varsity team, it was basically the varsity basketball girls. Their coach was like, we need you here. And so they all got to be on varsity for flag football. And then JV year after year was a bunch of yahoos like me who cannot catch, who cannot do things. Just losing every game.
I needed a little Ted Lasso.
We needed a Ted Lasso. But the coaches were like, we don't have time for this. Like, y'all can keep losing and we're going to focus on these girls over here.
I like that Ted is not good at this out of the gate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be really easy to just give him a secret superpower of he actually understands soccer, but he still just doesn't understand. But also, it's not like that's not the joke.
Yeah. I mean, they don't even show any of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not concerned with the soccer plotline too much, which I like.
Yeah.
After the game in the locker room, Ted calls Jamie into his office to lay a little positive reinforcement on him, letting him know that if he could only play as a member of the team, that the sky's the limit for him. And it seems like for a moment when Jamie leaves the office that maybe Ted is getting through to him, like he finally absorbed something that Ted had said.
Yeah, it's first of all, it's Phil Dunster, who's 28 years old. So this Jamie character is pretty young.
Jamie, the actor's name is Phil?
His name's Phil. I don't know that he gives me Phil vibes, but his name's Phil Dunster.
Doesn't give me Dunster vibes either.
Certainly not Dunster. Dunstar, perhaps? He's from North England. Phil Dunstar? Mm, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when he's talking to Ted, it's like the first time we see him not having his like smug, cheeky face. Like he immediately, when he's, you know, talking to him, he makes a comment like, oh, it was my right foot cross, like assuming he's about to get in trouble for doing like one thing wrong. So he's super humble for a second there. And then he seems like vaguely grateful when Ted's like, no, you're really great. It's just you're, you know, being a dick, except he doesn't say that, but you get it. So then when he leaves the locker room, we're like, okay, Jamie's turning over a new leaf. And then Trent, the lion haired reporter, Trent Krim, Jamie like hesitates. And for once he like does the right thing and is like, you know, yeah, we're upset about the game. I'm just 1-11, and just leaves it at that. But then he has to like go back to being Jamie again.
Yeah. He just can't fight it.
I tell you what, but you know what? It's okay. We've got all season. We're gonna see what we get.
I mean, I bet Jamie has just been had so many coaches and so many other people just say how much of a jerk he is because he's so not a team player, and so he's used to being super defensive,
right?
About things because he knows he's good, and to have Ted come along and go and not fight him on being such a jerk to the rest of the team, but go, yeah, you're being a jerk, but also you're really good. You have a genuine gift.
Yeah.
Ted is just so genuine and calm about it, as opposed to what, I mean, normal depictions of coaches are, which is just screaming matches in their faces.
Right. Yeah. It's like, rather than making him feel bad about his shortcomings, he focuses on the potential of where he could go.
Yeah.
Which is, definitely something Jamie's not used to.
Did all of you guys grow up playing sports? Did you guys have coaches like that or no?
I feel like I had maybe not to the level of Ted Lasso, but I've had some good coaches in my life.
My band teacher said something profound that I only recognized in retrospect after having taken so many years of improv, doing so many years of improv. And he said, if you're messing up on the field, just make it look like you're doing it on purpose.
Oh,
not even just please don't do that. But it's going to happen. You're going to mess up. Just make it look like you're messing up on purpose. Because I mean, the people that are judging it and the people in the audience, they've probably never seen the show before. So you just being way out in right field while literally the entire formation is on the left side of the field. if you're doing it with gusto, it can look purposeful. And I mean, that's what I learned doing improv. Just make it, if you mess up, just kind of lean into it, fail with gusto.
That would be a great memoir title. Messing up on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Failing with gusto.
Yeah.
Both. Also in the locker room, there's a scene or a little shot where Roy comes in screaming in anger over the loss, and Nate in solidarity shatters the office window.
No, that was wild. I'm like, oh shoot.
I feel like you jumped when we first watched it.
That was fucking embarrassing.
Oh, I am equally livid. Oh my god.
And also Ted and Beard fixed the water pressure, which is nice. It was the only like valid suggestion in the suggestion box. Mm-hmm.
And that came from our friend Roy Kent.
Yeah.
Who is also shirtless yet again.
Yeah. So now he gets to water that beautiful coat under a strong stream of hotness. So maybe now we're turning Roy around a little bit. That's how you get him. So there's a party in the locker room. Beard plays some Tribe. They pass out leftover cake. Ted brings a couple slices up to Rebecca and Higgins in her office and promises better results for the team are coming, and he invites them down to the locker room to hang out with the team and show their support. And Rebecca again is asking Ted, where are those biscuits from? But Ted will never give her such intel. Mm-hmm. And then we see we see Higgins dancing in the locker room, which is great, getting drunk on sweet, sweet icing.
Highly uncomfortable. I did not need that scene.
You know what's super tasty?
Cake.
Cold or frozen icing.
Mm.
Oh. It's so tasty.
Do you think it was cold?
The icing? No.
Yeah, it's been out for a while.
Yeah, they should have put it in a refrigerator. I just like cold cake.
You like that show, Cold Cake?
Yeah, that's my favorite procedural. It's about a baker that is trying to clear out the fridge and has to figure out where all of these frozen cakes were supposed to go.
I'd watch that.
I feel like Kristen Bell stars in it.
Yeah,
I'd watch that. That sounds great.
It's still a detective show, but with the stakes of the Great British Bake Off.
Oh, wow. This is fantastic.
Wait, did everyone watch Great British Bake Off? Is everyone caught up?
Honestly, Great British Bake Off is way too tense for me.
Oh no.
I don't like shows with competition in them. I don't like it when people lose.
Julia, did you watch? Did you finish it this season?
I watched up through Mary Berry, and when Mary mm-hmm. Berry wasn't on it anymore, it just hurt me to the core. And mm-hmm. I haven't gone back to it because it was this special little home place that I would turn to every evening, and then it was all shaken up and I couldn't handle it. So I have not gone back there.
Do you know why she's not on it anymore?
No.
So when it changed ownership from, I don't know if it was Channel 4 to Sky or BBC to Channel 4, whatever it was, when it changed ownership to a different channel, she's so loyal that she didn't want to go with it. Like she loved the crew and the producers and everything that worked on the show. She thought it would have been wrong to go work on the show with somebody else, so she just stepped out.
That's really nice.
That is really nice.
She's the best.
Too bad that show is way too competitive for me.
I mean, this last season, I shed a tear at the finale. Like, wow. It was so good. It was just a sweet boy who won, who, you know, he's chasing his dream because the show's been on for so long. He's like, I've been watching since I was 9 years old. I'm like, oh, shoot. And then he won. And then he did like photo montages of him as a kid. And I'm like, woof, this is too much. It was great.
I am a sucker for sweet boys. I like it whenever men achieve their dreams and they cry and they are emotional about it.
Kenny, this sweet boy has so much rosacea. You would love it.
He's so sweet.
Oh, he got them rosy cheeks, though.
I'm going to put a little spoiler alert before all this for the Great British Bake Off.
Okay, good. And also just shout out to Peter, sweet baby Peter. If you're listening, we'd love to have you on.
So we're at the end of the episode. We're in the third act or the fifth, depending on how they write this show.
There's like 47 acts this episode.
Rebecca's home. She's drinking. She's obsessing over Rupert. She's watching the TMZ type program. She's surfing the web. She's looking at the little army man that Ted left for her. And Higgins calls her and sends her the paparazzi photos of Ted and Keeley. And she's really struggling with the idea of sabotaging Ted here because she knows that he's truly a wonderful dude, but she also just wants that tasty revenge.
Yes.
And then we see Ted in his home, and this is the scene of the show that almost made me cry the first time. We see that he's the one making the damn biscuits and packing them neatly into the little pink boxes.
Come on.
Idea that he's putting so much effort into winning people over, and unbeknownst to him, they're contemplating screwing him over.
They don't contemplate. She says do it. Because right, then she sees a thing of her ex with the new young girl and she's angry and she says do it.
Yeah, that pushes her over the vindictive edge.
Mm-hmm. Hurt people hurt people, y'all.
So true.
Wow.
But I feel like even if Ted knew she was doing that, he wouldn't stop making those biscuits.
No,
he wouldn't. I don't think he would.
And I guess her idea is to publish these photos to create this scandal in an attempt to damage Ted's likability or to create a rift between Ted and Jamie in the locker room, or is it both?
Could be both.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Both. Just to create damage.
Yeah. Well, she does it. She drops the little green army man on the floor and she walks away, you know, surely to drink herself to sleep in her giant silk sheeted bed.
Don't you judge her. You don't know that.
Come on, she's rich. She had a fancy wine glass.
She did.
Before we end the episode with a fun little game, let us get some plugs out of the way. Please follow the show on Twitter at LassoCast. And also, if you have a second, do the whole rate, review, and subscribe thing on whatever podcast service you use to listen to us. We aren't going to do paid advertisements on LassoCast, but if you're feeling generous and you can afford to do so, you could donate to the podcast through Venmo. Just look for LassoCast on there. And if you leave a question or a note on Venmo, we'll make sure to read it on the air. And maybe down the line, we'll have a Patreon or something. Kenny, where else can the fine folks hear you?
You can listen to me on my other podcasts, ID 4 Minutes at a Time, where we are going through the entirety of the Roland Emmerich 1996 film Independence Day, 4 Minutes at a Time. And also you can catch me on Shame Watch, a podcast where we review guilty pleasure movies. That's where you can do that, man.
So during episode 2, Rebecca's character is Googling her ex-husband, and we get a little glimpse of the top searches for Rupert Mannion. So, John, do you want to tell Kenny and Juliet about our game here?
Yes. Welcome to the Search Engine Autofill Results Game, sponsored by Alta Vista. how this works,
getting the Alta Vista mine.
And this is a Juliet versus Kenny challenge. And how it works, I'm going to fire through 10 words or phrases that might show up as a suggestion when Rebecca searches Rupert Mannion. If you think that the word or phrase did indeed show up on Rebecca's screen, you'll say autofill. If you think it's a word or phrase that I made up, you'll say not a fill.
That's practice. Okay? Kenny?
Unreal. That's
autofill
hilarious.
Or not a fill. And we'll go one person at a time. We'll do Juliet first.
Okay.
Are you clear on the rules of the game, Juliet?
I believe so. We'll see what happens.
And I'll tell you right away if you're right or wrong, okay?
Okay, gotcha.
And Sai's going to keep track.
Okay.
And whoever has the most correct guesses at the end wins some chin chin. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Okay, I'm stretching now.
All right, Juliet, oh, here good. We go.
Hey, Juliet.
Yes.
Good luck.
Oh.
All right, here we go. Juliet. And we're starting now. Divorce.
Autofill.
Yes. Net worth.
Autofill.
Correct. Weight.
What's it? Phil Pat. Oh. Not a Phil.
Not a Phil. There you go. You are correct. AFC Richmond.
Oh, autofill.
Correct. Shoe size.
Not a Phil.
Correct. Nose ring.
Not a Phil.
Correct. Vocal range.
Not a Phil.
Correct. Models.
Autofill.
Correct. Private jet.
Autofill.
No, that is not right. No. Favorite milk.
Not a Phil.
Correct. That's it. Yay. Did you get 9 right?
You got 9 out of 10 points.
Self high five.
Kenny, are you ready?
Absolutely.
Wait.
You got to get 10 out of 10 to win, buddy.
I really need to tell Kenny. Good luck.
Thank you.
And we're starting right now. Vehicular manslaughter.
Not a Phil.
Correct. Penis girth.
Not a Phil.
Wrong.
Wrong.
Favorite smell.
Not a Phil.
Correct. Cheating.
Autofill.
Correct. Scotland.
Not a Phil.
Correct. Ex-wife.
Autofill.
Wrong.
Ah!
Facts.
Autofill.
Correct. Slip and slide.
I really wanted to be autofill, but not a Phil.
Correct. Burger King.
Not a Phil.
Correct. And height.
Autofill.
That is correct. How did he do, Sai?
Oh, boy. Johnny, I hope you prepared a tiebreaker. We've got number 9. We can't afford 2 chin chin. I said we can afford 1.
Guess what? They both win.
Yes!
Oh, boy.
That was the search engine autofill results game sponsored by Alta Vista. Thank you so much for playing, Kenny and Juliet. Yes.
What's better than having a winner? Having 2 winners.
That's right. Right.
Chin chin for everybody.
Chin chin for all my friends.
Don't be surprised if it shows up in a Ziploc bag.
The rest.
Divide it between the two of you.
In a box with stroganoff. So be prepared.
Fantastic.
My roommate just opens a box just that is sopping wet already. Yeah. And then
it's the new can of snakes, box of stroganoff. Juliet.
Yes.
Really appreciate you coming on to join us. It's lovely having you.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Lasso Cast is produced by Saida Rhodes and edited by me, John. Music is by MG Sound. Thanks for listening. Come back next week where we will discuss episode 3 entitled Trent Krim from The Independent.